Okay, so.
We're going to talk about interrupting time stealers. Judy and Lena, thank you for that. And so.
Do you want me to start?
You can start and I'll jump in.
Sounds great. The new person full of emotions needs time to vent. I think that it is important for the new person when they come in. We just had a lady that came to our meeting this last week that we've seen her at other meetings, and she came and we did kind of give her the floor to just kind of, you know, we read our topic, but kind of just go into specifics as far as, well, how are you doing with that? And had similar kind of situation where the husband is on one page and she's on the other page. And so, yeah, we did give her the majority of the time in our group to just vent and tell us what's going on, but also to open it up to other people as far as saying, do you have any suggestions as far as what might be helpful? Or did you go through this yourself? Or, as you pointed out, like Ed and Donna, we have a couple there, and asked them, so you went through this similar situation, you know, maybe you could offer what you did, you know, to them. So just being supportive. I believe somebody that's coming, especially with the deer in the headlights for their first or second meeting, or somebody that's been before and then comes back, but just offer up encouragement, support. Phone numbers are really helpful too at the end of a meeting. Email, phone number, you know, if they need somebody to talk to. We give out your card. You know.
Get out his number.
Yeah. The website, we also as well point people to the website.
Do you ever have a situation where they're talking too long and you have to kind of cut it off a little bit?
Yes. Okay. And that's, we find, well, either I hit my husband on the knee, or or sometimes he'll do that back to me. It's kind of we take turns with that. But sometimes I find just, you know, raising my hand to kind of redirect something, or to, when there's a pause, just to kind of jump right in and kind of either direct it back to the lesson, or open it up to where everybody can feel like they have an opportunity to share what's going on with them, whether it be to that particular lesson we're talking about, or if we've just moved on to, you know, the sharing part.
I'm doing the same thing, and I haven't really just stuck with newcomers mm-hmm. necessarily, but what I used to do is I would have a printout of a schedule, this is when we do things, so they knew mm-hmm. ahead of time when the sharing part was going to take place. And mm-hmm. what I found was happening was we were getting sharing in between no matter whether they knew what the schedule was or not. Mm-hmm. So I have flipped that. Mm-hmm. And so the first 30 minutes are introduction. Mm-hmm. And, well, what I do is I open up the meeting, talk mm-hmm. and just let them know briefly the lesson of what we're going to be discussing. Mm-hmm. Then I have them go around the room and introduce themselves. And the question I ask them is, you know, if they want to share what's going mm-hmm. on, you know, how are things going, and what they think might be helpful in the lesson that we're going, you know, what they mm-hmm. hope to get out of the lesson, just by knowing just what the topic is, as it relates to how things are going in their lives right now. So mm-hmm. that's how I set up the discussion the first 30 minutes.
So you're mm-hmm. preparing them for the lesson and asking them what they would like to get out of that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like share what's going on in your lives,
yeah, mm-hmm. an
then what, and then with the focus of what would you hope to get out of the lesson that you think would be helpful for you?
So do you do the sharing first and lesson last?
Yes.
Okay, and you do that every time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've mm-hmm. started doing that the last okay. couple of months mm-hmm. Because we've been getting a lot of new people. And so they just naturally, you know, want to speak mm-hmm. up or whatever.
You're adjusting to the
yeah.
crowd that you're getting.
Yeah, okay. But then what I found is even the old-timers that are coming in, they are kind of liking that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, you know, we're taking up the same amount of time anyway. So this helps me to kind of know what they're going through, helps me to kind of know what my focus, you know, the things that I hope to uh-huh. have brought out in the lesson based on what I'm hearing them say in the beginning.
Can I ask you, do you have a hard time with timing on that? In other words, do you always have time to do the lesson, or do you find you're your meeting time running over? I'm just asking how you manage time if you start with sharing.
Well, because we have our group isn't huge.
Okay.
That probably makes a big difference too.
Okay.
If you have, you know, 20 or 30 people in your group, this would be really hard to manage in an hour and a half doing it that way. But we get maybe 8-9 people max.
Okay.
So.
And it works.
And it works. It's been working. Yeah.
The point of history is in the early days of PAL, we always did the sharing first and the topic last. But somewhere along the line, you switched over to do, and it's a good reminder that whichever way you want to do it is fine. Mm-hmm. And I think if we look at the guidelines, the group guidelines, the group format, it actually says there that you have the option to do the sharing first if you want, you know, either way. But I think most groups, we do the lesson first and then the sharing.
And usually Rick and I will share first, so we model then for them.
That's good.
You know, that I think that kind of helps too. Of course, there's always exceptions. You know, we used to just say our name and who we're here for and what the drug of choice was and moved it on to the next one. And that wasn't a good model because we were still getting a lot more information. Mm-hmm. So we thought, let's just give them, you know. And then I would say, you know, the topic on, you know, enabling checklist. And what I hope to learn from tonight's lesson based on all that we've been going through, what I just shared, is... Boy, what am I doing that's enabling, and how can I stop doing that? Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next person. Mm-hmm.
Good example of going with the flow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I thought about with this topic is the new person who's got the emotional, and sometimes they really need, they need to talk.
Right.
And sometimes they get stuck in a place that maybe was a year ago, you know, when my kid was in high school, and they get stuck there,
mm-hmm.
and you're not getting anywhere, right? You're not really getting the story. You're sort of stuck in high school.
Right.
One of the things I found is you can say, can I ask you a couple of questions? Mm-hmm. Where's he at now?
Right.
Oh, he's in treatment? He's in Calvary? How long has he been there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sort of bring them into the present by asking them a few questions so that I can... I want to know their story. I mean, I really want to know where the kid is, but sometimes they just talk and they don't get there.
That's a good example of this topic we're talking about, which is how to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways to interrupt is to ask them questions like that when they're pausing for a breath. The other one, I like what Lena said, is you can just raise your hand as an interrupt because you have a visual one there. And that's a great point.
The junior facilitator helping you. I'm going to say that you're probably talking about like somebody else that's been to the meeting for a long amount of time. Like we have, like Diane comes to our meetings from time to time, and she comes to other meetings, and there's another couple that does, and we may use them as, you went through that. Can you share?
Mm-hmm.
So we may use that a lot. Or do you remember when that happened to you? Or
what about the person though who is being the junior facilitator without you asking?
Right.
That's kind of, so what we're talking about is they can use up a lot of time.
Okay, gotcha.
And so how do we interrupt? You know, I mean, I think that's what.
Okay. So yeah, in that instance, and we have had people as well with that, we may just kind of say, you know, we appreciate you giving that advice, but let's move on to somebody else and see if they have any suggestions to that, or you're just kind of redirecting it to another person. Okay, that's awesome. Let's make sure that we have enough time for everybody, so let's, you know, give an opportunity for everybody to share on that topic.
Would you think that there could ever be a time where you'd have a talk with them after the meeting if they do it too, if it's too much of a thing?
Yeah.
That you would have a talk with them after the meeting?
So there actually has been a couple of times where we've done seat plate, we've moved certain people that tend to talk to each other or talk a lot, where if you sit next to somebody versus if you're looking at somebody, it kind of has a different effect.
Okay, that's another point.
Somebody that wants to sit next to each other and talk all the time, if you sit next to that person, they're not so apt to side talk.
So you don't actually ask them to move?
No, you just do it without them knowing.
Okay.
You know, so you may put somebody
can
else.
You get up and move.
When they go to the bathroom, you take the chair.
You know.
This is a good example of how during our meetings we need lightness like this.
Right. So
there's always stuff to laugh at.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because before we've had somebody say, well, you know what, because they talk so much, maybe I'll sit next to that person so then they won't, you know.
The worst case we've had is a meeting one time, and this goes back about a year ago, where the junior facilitator was so obnoxious that we actually asked him not to come back. Now, this is a key thing here. He wasn't there for his son or daughter. He was there for his father. That doesn't mean he's not welcome to the meetings. But because of the, I mean, that's the most severe thing I've seen in 7 years, that we did ask him not to come back to the meetings. Because we talked to him a couple of times after the meetings. And it was clear that he wasn't really there to learn, he was there to teach. And that became pretty clear there. And he was also there to meet women. That was not as obvious, but it started to become a little more obvious. So anyway, that's a very extreme example.
Right.
There's an idea.
Yeah,
but that was a bad one, but it's an idea.
That happens at 12-step meetings all the time.
That's the 13th step, isn't it?
Step.
Yeah.
So most of the junior facilitators, though, are just benign. They're right. They're not a great big problem.
Right. We've also, too, had to, in the beginning, after we've read the preamble, also discuss the fact that sometimes, whether it be even six people, sometimes you could have one person that might monopolize a lot of time. Mm-hmm. We've had to say, you know, let's keep our sharing to a minimum just to allow everybody the opportunity to. So we have had to kind of say that during certain times.
I can weigh in on that. I'm running another group in a different program. Sometimes we run into that, especially with a new person that was really venting, but it could be with a junior facilitator. And this is this time again where if you're the facilitator and you look around the room, everybody's looking at you because they're waiting for you to stop. Person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that there's no air left in the room. Everybody's going.
Right.
So I was forced to face my fear, of stopping somebody. And so I'd say, Mike, I want you to understand that after the meeting, I have plenty of time to listen to your entire story. Mm-hmm. But right now, we don't have time to hear all of it because there's a lot of people in the room that need to share tonight.
Good point. Very good
point. It works pretty good.
So we are talking about interrupting, and when we're talking about interrupting, we're talking about the fear of offending someone.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the fear of someone not like me, so there's a
hesitation.
Lot of things here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you say to the person who just can't bring themselves to interrupt? The facilitator who just shows, because we're given strategies, but hearing the strategies are one thing.
That's right.
But how do I deal with this fear?
Tap your husband on the knee.
I do that.
Tap on the knee, hand goes
challenge,
up.
The other challenge that happens, too, is we'll go around the circle and people will introduce themselves. You know, like I said, give us an update, what they want to get out of the lesson. Then we'll have somebody that will then start asking that person questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's where it starts to get a little overwhelming, I think.
How do you handle that, Judy?
I would say it's only happened a couple of times. I'm still struggling with what's the most effective way to do it. But what I've done is I would say that that's a really good question. I think we'll be able to get an answer to that in our lesson tonight. And then move on to the next person.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that.
I don't know if that's... Sometimes it doesn't happen in the lesson.
But again, that's kind of like taking the junior facilitator. They're acting like a junior facilitator, but there's a difference between someone acting like a junior facilitator and someone through time taking that position.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of see that those kind of go together there. Thanks. And yes?
I just have one more. Someone who was a newcomer in our group, you know, as you said, when it continues to talk and almost like the air is going out of the room and people, you could see the discomfort, but not because, it was because the pain was so evident. She was just, she was just bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just there with our mouths gaping and looking and thinking, wow, you know. And then, thank you, Mike, because it was just so evident that as we're all trying to get our breath, said, oh, you've modeled it so well. Sonia, is this something that we could pray about?
Mm-hmm.
And we started to go in that direction. And, you know, just as you did, and then, well, yes, yes was her answer. And so then it was, could you tell us what you would like for us to pray about. Yeah. And so as she started and backed up to do that, her body language changed, her whole demeanor changed, she really relaxed into it. And she identified herself what a key issue was, that before it was just, you know, the rampant bleeding, and so it helped her. And it also, you know, the rest of us were going, huh. And then again, like you said, you know, you've done this so many times, and would you like to pray, or would you like for one of us to?
Yeah.
And, you know, so we just kept following the lead that, you know, you've modeled, that it works.
Good point. Here's another interrupt.
Yeah.
When you're pausing, mm-hmm. would you like a prayer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it brings in the issue, too, are we a Christian organization? Is PAL a Christian organization? The answer is no. But we are an organization that's open to everybody, and it consists of a lot of Christians. And we meet in churches. We prefer to meet in churches because there's never a question about prayer. So, I mean, that's my answer to that whole thing. And so we do want to recognize this concept of that we offer support and encouragement and education and acceptance and prayer. And I'm sure glad you brought that up, because that is a wonderful way to interrupt a person.
Sure.
And too many times I don't ask, and I need to remind myself to ask more often. And I take, once in a while a person will say, I don't prefer a prayer at this time. No problem. We're back to that acceptance thing there. But just to offer it. Look how different that is. Let's pray. We're back to that offering versus giving.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Tom.
That's one of the things in the beginning, whenever I start the meeting, I always say that that PALS believes in the power of prayer.
Absolutely.
I, you know, make sure that that's brought right out, that this is a Christian or a power of prayer mm-hmm. organization. And then, I guess then I end up, would you like to say a prayer to start the meeting?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, so, yeah.
You know, in that whole situation, when you do, in this situation that Karen's talking about, not only does it make her step back and be relaxed, but it makes her start thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that session, she stayed later and talked more in the sense of herself, where she needs to be.
Yeah.
Because it opened up her heart.
Absolutely.
You know, through the power of prayer.
Yeah. And notice, we didn't have to tell her what to do. We didn't have to ask her, well, would you explain to me why you're doing that, which is just a clever way to tell you what to do. You know, sometimes a question is a disguised statement. And I think for us to be more aware of that, because, you know, someone can say, you know, I really believe that that I shouldn't kick out my son at this time. He's using heroin, but I need to keep him home for a while. So someone in the group, junior facilitator, could say, no, you can't let him stay in the home. No, I don't want to say that. We don't give advice, so I'll be clever about it. Please explain to me. I'm not telling you what to do here. Please explain to me your thinking behind that.
Yeah.
You see how that's a cleverly disguised statement of, I don't agree with that. That's not right. So for us to be a little more aware of that concept, too, is... And the person had a really negative, I heard about this, had a real negative reaction to that. But again, how could you? I didn't tell you what to do. I just asked you an innocent question.
What are you thinking?
Exactly. So the opposite of acceptance is rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no middle ground. I'm either giving you messages of acceptance when I'm talking to you, or I'm giving you messages of rejection.
Mm.
And the only time when we're together and it's not no middle ground is when I'm talking about someone else. So, and I think for us to be kind of aware of it, this kind of makes me more aware of that and more aware of my motives. So as facilitators, we're learning we may have multiple motives, and the people coming in have multiple, and we're not getting all the details. But if I'm there to accept you and pray for you, I'm doing a lot less than trying to, you know, push you forward. So I share the lessons, and whatever part you take, I need to embody that, not just say it. If a person took the lesson I gave them, and they were mad, and they just threw it on the ground and stomped it, it's yours, I gave it to you, do whatever you want to with it.
Mm-hmm.
For us to be willing to give in that respect. Then, because otherwise, it's not really true giving. Mm-hmm. If I give you this, why haven't you used this? We've gone over this three times, you know. So that keeps coming up over and over again. So the junior facilitator, we've got a couple different things there. Look at the third one. Mm-hmm. Lena, would you read that third one?
Yeah, likes to talk, complain, or justify not taking new action.
Anyone have any of those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patience.
Yeah.
Patience, yeah.
Yeah.
What do we do with those?
I would,
step three.
Yeah. I would say just encourage. I liked what Steve said, and it goes along with the whole when you recognition to somebody for the small steps they are taking. Mm. So if even though they may be just throwing up all over the place and telling all the stuff, but if you like just give them the encouragement to just pick one thing, and that was probably one of the biggest things I learned coming into PAL and I always try to share that experience with others, is the one thing that I learned, which to other people would just be like, well, you should know that, is I don't have to answer the phone. Mm-hmm. You, from the very beginning, it's like, what do you mean I don't have to answer the phone no matter how many times it rings? Wow, that's a new behavior. So,
yeah.
Or I can say no, mm-hmm. or I can say I'll have to get back to you, mm-hmm. or I can say I don't have to give you an answer right now. I understand that you want that answer right now, but I'm going to have to get back to you. Mm-hmm. So just kind of sharing that mm-hmm. it's not something that's going to happen right now and overnight or even over a specified amount of time, but if you take one thing and you practice that one thing, then you can get better at that one thing, mm-hmm. and then you can move on to something else.
That's an encouraging message.
Right, so yeah. I try to, instead of, because it's huge. I mean, I remember, and I still have my moments, but it's your journey, mm-hmm. But it's a matter of just making that journey better over time.
Mm-hmm. So, baby steps.
Yeah,
baby steps.
Yeah, but one of the interesting things that just happened with justifying not taking new action,
mm-hmm.
new family, okay. mom comes in by herself. First night, she buys the Smoke and Mirrors book,
mm-hmm.
okay, and she, you know, she was kind of, long story short, this is her son on heroin that she homeschooled probably through high school, he's living at home. But anyway, they're trying to figure out whether they should throw him out. The husband is like, I've had it with this kid. And mom is like, well, you know, I just hate to see him out there on this, you know, that whole scenario.
Right.
What was interesting, what was an eye-opener for me is when she came back the next week and she says, you know, I read that book and my husband read that book. My husband's comment was, let's say their son's name is Joe, you know. He said, I saw Joe in every page of that book.
Mm-hmm.
And her comment was, I didn't see any connection at all to what I see in Joe. That spoke volumes to me as a facilitator, because I'm thinking, okay, mom's in denial or something. You know? And so what do I do? What can I do to encourage her, but yet get her to be willing to take a step of change towards something else?
Is it your job to get her to notice?
Well, no, not necessarily.
But is it our job, in other words?
Right, yeah. But I'm thinking she's coming to a group,
mm-hmm.
and if she's at that point where she's coming to a group, she's looking for some answers.
Right.
It may not be the answer she wants to hear, but she's looking for something. And so she has been texting me, asking for prayer, and of course I text her back and said, absolutely, I'll pray for you, you know. And I try to, again, encourage, you know, saying, you know, sometimes when you're new and you come, you know, anybody new that comes, it seems really, really overwhelming, but just keep thinking to yourself, baby steps, you know, all those kind of things. So the last time she came, she she said all the things that they have been trying, you know, and of course all of the things are enabling, right?
Yeah, they're not working.
Yeah, and so I finally just asked her, and I don't know what you guys think, maybe I was being a little too bold, but I finally just said, well, you know, what do you think it's gonna take for Joe to make some changes?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know how to answer that,
yeah.
You know? But her response was, you know, I just don't want to see him out on the street.
Yeah. What if
so I just, you know, I just kind of backed off at that point. But
here's a question. Here's a question.
Yeah.
When somebody, that happens. I bet it's happened in everybody's group. And this is just a hypothetical question. You ask it like a hypothetical. What if Joe being on the street was the key to his sobriety?
Mm-hmm. Well put.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I'm not going to offer an opinion. I'm just going to say, what if that were true? At least mom has to stop and go, gosh, I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I think there are moments in the group where it just comes to us. You know, in other words, I don't think we can plan that kind of a thing out. But what do you guys think? Is that a permissible thing to say?
Absolutely.
I think so too.
Absolutely.
Yes, I think so too. And once again, the key is non-attachment. So mm-hmm. I'm putting it out there. If I put it out there with a string, you'll feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same game that the parents are playing with the child. They're putting stuff out there with the string. Here's some money, but here's the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a place to live, but here's what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a cell phone, but here's what you better start changing.
Right.
And so we're playing accidentally that same game, and that's what we're learning to stop playing.
So I heard both parties saying, how do I just hear them? And then it seems like our brain tends to go, all right, what are we gonna do to fix this? You know, kind of like, and so it really takes a lot of compassion and non-judgment, and I have to work really hard at that at that moment to just love them just like they are and say, it sounds like you're really having a hard time. And I'm going to tell you that this is the toughest business in town, and you're in the right place.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to fix them in any way,
right.
Just let them be heard.
Right, and I think that is just as a valid answer as that. And I think when we pray and when we're learning to turn our will over to God more, that how many of you had this? Something pops in my head that I didn't even think I was going to think. Where do you think that came from? So to trust that process, to trust. So all we have, excellent point, Dr. Tom. These are guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
There's no absolutes here. And if we just let these guidelines guide us, but as we're doing this, we're letting God guide us, that's kind of, how do you teach that? How do you learn that? The answer is through experience and through time, and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens. Yes, Tom?
This justify not taking new action, there's different people in the group, let's say, that may say, well, that's enabling, you shouldn't do that, you know, or whatever. And so I try to change it into the fact that, okay, well, wait a second, let's think about this. In order for the addict to make a change, he's going to have to hit bottom, and then he's going to make a change. And I said, for example, you, Linda, or whatever, you've hit bottom as a parent, as a supporter. You are no longer giving in to these people. Now, this person over here, they're not that far yet. They haven't reached bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They are still giving money. They're still, you know, it happens to be her son, which is a very vulnerable situation because it's a son-mother type situation. She's going to have to reach that pain of what she's doing, which isn't working. In other words, she has to hit bottom, and she hasn't hit bottom.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So you can't just tell her that this is what she's got to do, because she's got to hit bottom on her own. And once she hits bottom, like this person and this person and this person, then they'll be able to actually recover and start helping.
Good point. And that's kind of what Karen and John were talking about in their example. And here we are, as we're helping them hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
We're helping them see the reality of their powerlessness, and then that guides them to God.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of a funnel in that respect. Remember that this likes to talk, complain, or justify not taking new action is not something wrong, but it's in the context of they're using up a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at that context. So we're back to, okay, you know, people have given you suggestions, and you keep telling us how no suggestions work. And so we're saying, fine, no suggestions are working.
Right.
Excuse me, we got to move on.
Right.
Or let me ask you a quick question. In other words, we're interrupting them too, not being stuck on, well, that didn't work. What about this? And mm-hmm. see, so once again, we're interrupting so that we can move on to the thing. So these are just examples of people and situations that, you know, test us. We're the timekeepers.
Mike, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
It's related to that, and it's not about timekeeping, so I apologize for
no,
that.
No, that's all right.
But one of the strongest justifications I have run up against for not taking new action is co-occurring issues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That is when somebody's got a kid who's a drug addict and a type 1 diabetic,
yeah.
a drug addict and has a mental health
yep.
Diagnosis, a drug, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, the co-occurring thing. And what's happened is they say, my kid's different. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are lucky. Your kids mm-hmm. are addicted to heroin. My kid's addicted to heroin, and he's paranoid, schizo type, this, that, zoop, okay? And it's locking them up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're basically going, I can't not enable him
mm-hmm. yeah.
or her, because they can't live, they yeah. cannot be okay, and I'm stuck on that. I don't even know where to go with that.
We're going to discuss that in our next...
Okay.
Our next lesson here, that's a good segue mm-hmm. to our next lesson, and we have to bring this to a close. So thank you, Lena and Judy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.